Is to do what they think it is the best thing to do to protect their rights. We know from experience, and you know our history, that a strike takes a lot of discipline, a lot of work and engagement, a lot of commitment, and a lot of time to plan and organize. So although we see what they're doing, this is not something that we're involved. If we were ever get to a point where we're going to do that, it would take a lot of planning, looking at the pros and cons under the circumstances. So all I'm asking is whoever's going to be out there to just be careful. We don't want these people that are fighting for others to be retaliated against and detained by ICE.
Today, Sotomayor, we want to thank you for being with us. Longtime labor leader, president of the United Farm Workers. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
WRHU, Hempstead Radio Hofstra University. 88.1 FM, WCWP Brookville LIU Post. 88.3 FM, WRCT Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University. 88.3 FM, WVCR Loudonville Siena College. 98.1 and 105.9 FM, WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
89.5 Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa. 88.7 WRHU Hempstead. 89.3 WRCT Pittsburgh, Radio Carnegie Tech. You're listening to the One World Radio Show. I'm your host, Cody Millar. Joining with me is co-host Ricky Hubert, as well as one of our new presenters from Bush Radio, Kusi Vetholm.
Yay, Kusi.
Good day, everyone.
Thank you for allowing me to be part of the family.
Yes, we're so excited to have you join us. Hope everyone is having a marvelous day so far.
We are. I was talking with Kusi yesterday. Kusi, how long have you been at Bush Radio?
Honestly, I think it's started in 2017 at Bush, and I've been loving it because it's a work for the community, hearing stories around our communities. And also as Bush Radio, it's like a training station for mostly interns and people who would love to be in media. But obviously with Bush, it's more of telling stories within our communities. But yeah, I've been loving it so far.
And what other programs do you work on at Bush Radio?
So I'm the producer and the presenter of a magazine show. Monday to Friday starts at 9 and ends at 12. It's called The Morning Cruise, where we talk from artists to organizations to people that are doing amazing things within their communities. And also, I'm a facilitator for a children's radio program, which we're having it on Saturdays, where it's split into 3 hours, where from 9 till 10 is Minion Talk, which are small kids from 6 to 11. And then from 10 till 11, it's a smaller younger ones, where it starts from 12 until 14. And then from 15 till 18 is teenagers, which I'm the one who's facilitating them. But everything has been done by them. So that's what I do. So I'm basically busy from Monday to Saturday at Bush. Only on Sunday I'm off.
And Sunday's your day of rest. Well, yeah. If you like telling amazing stories, you've come to the right place, because we got a great guest today, Kimberly Minto, the founder and CEO of Sitting Beauty Magazine. Kimberly, thank you very much for coming on One World Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who might not be aware of what Sitting Beauty is, they're probably going to know a lot about it by the end of our conversation. Tell everybody, everybody a little bit about what it is.
So Sitting Beauty Magazine is a digital fashion and disability lifestyle publication for women between the ages of 25 to 35 that covers adaptive fashion, beauty, disability representation, and disability representation in media.
And your passion for fashion, as we'll call it. How young were you when you got interested in the world of fashion? Was it something as a child, teenager? When did it happen for you?
Funny thing about it is I started a fashion magazine, but I got into makeup first, years before my mom was even okay with me wearing it. But when she finally did in junior high, I started to play around with it and really love the different looks and different aspects of self-expression that you could do with colors, or how you could express your mood just by which, you know, you're wearing as makeup. And then fashion came a little bit later.
And what was it about makeup originally?
I don't know. I was just always looking at magazines and I would see the looks and I was like, oh, this is pretty and creative. And I want to be able to create something like that for, you know, on my face. And I had to take the time to learn how to do it because we haven't discussed this yet, but I have a disability. So that means that doing things that require fine motor skills like that, it was much harder for me to do. So I had to practice more, and eventually I got to a point where I was like, okay, I can do these looks, but these intricate aspects I'm not able to do on my own. I practiced to a certain degree, got fed up with it, and gave up. And I was like, my looks are just going to be this, if I'm doing intricate looks, I'm gonna need help. And but I still wanted to play around with that self-expression aspect, so I kind of got into fashion after that.
And you went to school. I know we're saying that you're interested in makeup and fashion, but you went to school. You didn't go to school for fashion. You came here to Hofstra, but you went for marketing.
Yes, because again, I was trying to pick something that I felt I could do anywhere. You know, marketing, whether you're a school or a business of some kind, everything can be marketed to and for consumers to a certain degree. So I wanted to pick something that I felt was I'd be able to do anywhere and that was so needed to do. But my disability and considering what my physical limitations might be in the workplace in terms of wheelchair access also played a part in that. So I studied marketing. I love it. I truly enjoyed studying it, and it plays a big part in what I do now since I'm a solo entrepreneur. But I quickly learned that just having the degree wasn't going to be able to get me in the door that the way I expected. And after getting tired of that whole job hunt cycle of going in on interviews, either hearing back or not, or hearing back and then having to kind of jump through hoops to find out about accessibility without mentioning my disability, because it's not always the seen in the best light, so you don't always mention it. Trying to figure out that it was just a whole big pile of let's not do this for me. It just became a whole situation of I want to do something fun. Well, while I'm going through this, I needed something where I could put my mental energy that was I liked doing and I liked talking about it. I was good at writing. I liked fashion. I was able to share my love of fashion with other women with disabilities. So I started writing in between doing the job hunting. And then eventually I just stopped job hunting and the writing evolved into the magazine, which I can get into more details about later.
I know that in South Africa, when it comes to, disability, it's one of where our government takes it seriously, with things like accessibility and also be able to maneuver. There's even programs for it, but still it's not enough because, there's still complaints about certain issues that are still not being taken care of. So I want to know with you, before you even venture into as an entrepreneur, what are some of the difficulties for you personally in university and also in your neighborhood when it comes to accessing things like public transport, going from one place to another? Was it easy, or do you feel like it's you where you are, it's well equipped for anyone with disability?
I don't know if we have enough time for me to give you a complete answer, which is an answer in itself. There's a lot of services out there. There's paratransit instead of taking the public transportation buses. If you can manage that with a physical disability, if you can do both. I know for me, I'm afraid of taking the trains in New York. I live on Long Island, so I was like, oh, let's go to the city, and experience all the things that New York City has to offer. That sounds doable to anybody else, but for me, my family's like, if you go into the city on a train, when you get to your destination, is the elevator going to be working or are you going to be stuck in the subway? So there have been improvements in that, but I'm just not ready to take the risk of going somewhere where I might be stuck, so I don't get to go in to New York City as much as I'd like. So there's that. The paratransit is amazing in the fact that there are different services that I can use to navigate all of Long Island, but their timing in terms of they give you a window. It's not like Uber where you're like, oh, I want to book it to go here and here. they give you a window and then you just have to be ready. And the service is great in that sense, but you don't get to plan. You can't go to a friend and say, hey, tomorrow I want to go to a movie with you, or let's go to a movie and then dinner. The service can manage that, but you have to book these things days in advance, and it's not always going to be the easiest thing to make sure you're on time, because it is a public service and, you know, they have other clients. I wish wheelchair accessible Uber was something that was available on Long Island. It's not yet. Hopefully it is in the near future, because that would make my life so much easier and the life of the family and friends that drive me around every time I need to go somewhere.
So now, how did those challenges push you, you know, toward becoming an entrepreneur?
I will share a little bit more of my entrepreneur story, because that did push me, and I will share the travel situations that I face now as an entrepreneur. We've talked about how I first started in makeup and fashion, but as someone with a physical disability who uses a wheelchair, and I'm sure listeners who are similar to me can attest, you are very used to people coming up to you and asking about your disability, whether or not they know you. And so that can be a very jarring thing. And one day I was at Hofstra, and I've talked about this several times. I was at Hofstra waiting for class to start and just, you know, reading through the material for class. And a fellow student came up to me, and I was waiting for that kind of question, you know, what happened to you? Why are you using a wheelchair? And instead, what she said to me was, oh, I like your boots. And for me, that was a moment of, you know, where is the disability related question in my head? And she didn't have one. We just talked about my shoes and the rest of my outfit. And it threw me, because, again, I was not used to that. But then I had this light bulb moment of, oh, fashion can be a conversation starter, not my wheelchair. So my entrepreneurship journey is kind of a culmination of moments, not one moment of, aha, let's do this. That is where it started for me, that I might be able to do something different. That is when I started writing about fashion and my experience with it as a disabled woman. And then during COVID, I was on social media a lot and talking to other women, and I would see similar questions about fashion, like I have to wear XYZ, but I can't wear it because of how my disability affects me. Does anybody have suggestions? And I kept seeing those questions, and someone was just asking different kind of things. And I was like, oh, I know the answer to these questions. I, you know, responded in the group. And then I thought, is there a central place where our community of women can get style tips and beauty tips that directly address their needs, the needs of a disabled body, or that you may not have the dexterity to do certain makeup looks or buttons or whatever it may be. Is there a resource for that? And there wasn't. I did the research, and there were disability magazines out there, but they didn't address fashion and makeup how I wanted to. So I was like, okay, I'm going to start this platform. And I just, after that, I did not know where to start. So then I reached out to a few friends and I told them what I wanted to do. One friend found this competition that was being hosted by the Viscardi Center and Iona University about entrepreneurial mindset. And through that program, after applying, and I got in, we spent the 6 to 7 weeks refining our ideas, your business idea. Then you'd have to focus on pitching in hopes of winning grant money for your business. I was able to do that, and that's what gave me the seed money to start my magazine. But since then, and through that contact, I was able to reach out to a lot of other organizations that help entrepreneurs with disabilities that I didn't know existed before this moment. And they weren't new organizations. So that taught me that you have to kind of talk to people a little bit, not tell everyone what you're doing if you have an idea, but talk to the people that you know are in your corner and are going to push you. So that helped me get started on that aspect. But then as I was building this entrepreneurial business, I was asked to give more speaking opportunities. Now, again, I don't drive, so I had to find ways to get to these locations. Someone who can physically drive is not going to spend the same amount of money to get to the location to do the speech or to appear at the event. So that was something I had to then take into account and build into my pricing for when I do speeches. So that's another entrepreneurial lesson that I've learned as a disabled individual.
And how has kind of your vision about Sitting Beauty evolved since the magazine's launch?
It hasn't really evolved, and I say that because the magazine is only my first stop, and I always knew that. I wanted to build a platform, not just a magazine. I have built this magazine for women with disabilities. I want to maybe do a podcast next, I don't know, or have branded products. But no, actually, take that back. It has evolved because people have asked me if I'm doing a men's version. And I just jokingly say, can I get the women's one off the ground first before you tack an entire entirely new publication onto my plate? Let me make sure this is running smoothly before I tackle a whole new demographic. And I wasn't, the first time someone brought it up and I was like, oh, you know, maybe. But then, you know, people kept asking, and I was like, all right, it'll be there in the pipeline somewhere. But I still want to focus mainly on women and building this women brand and something that empowers our community of women. And then I will, once I can find someone to help me dig into the demographic of men and how their needs might be different and what they're looking for in content, I will probably come up with another name for a male version of Sitting Beauty. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Talk us through, how do you approach curating fashion and beauty content that is truly adaptive versus simply aspirational? What criteria guide your editorial, Joseph?
Lots and lots of research. The thing about it is, years and years ago, I did have this idea a few years ago before everything was, you know, all these brands were coming out with adaptive clothing and stuff. But now that I'm in it, now that I'm constantly curating the content, I'm realizing it wouldn't have worked years ago because there would have been nothing for me to write. I would have gotten frustrated with trying to find content that didn't exist, that I thought was out, that I thought I needed or wanted, but didn't exist yet. Now there are brands like Zappos, Anthropology, JCPenney. They have adaptive collections. So, and this market is only getting bigger. I can research and find press releases, find upcoming things that they're doing in campaigns. And that's the kind of content that I include in my articles. And I had someone say to me once, well, couldn't anybody do the research and like find that without your magazine? And I said, yeah, they could, but they're probably not going to, because I'm a fashion girl at heart. I will always be that. But even before starting my magazine, I was looking for this content and I didn't know what I should be researching to find it. So I didn't. So I know that even if someone is a fashion lover like I am, they might not know to look for certain things for certain brands or know what to be searching for to find that style tip, beauty tip, or whatever it may be that they need. So research, talking to my community, my own lived experiences. I also talk about the fashion and beauty aspects in terms of that kind of research, but for my July issue, which I talk about my entrepreneurial experience with the competition. July is Disability Pride Month. So I talk about not being able to find content. Like, you have July 4th, you will do research for July 4th, Women's History Month. You go to graphic design tools, you find dozens of pieces of content that you can just put on a social media post in 3 seconds and share it to social media and be like, happy Women's History Month, and there's something there. Disability Pride Month, you can't find a ready-made template. If you're going to do that, you have to take pieces of content to build something yourself, like a photo, find a picture of the Disability Pride flag, and you have to build it yourself, which is its own issue. So the kind of content that I'm focused on is about empowering women, fashion, and beauty. And that's not going to be something that people are searching for, which makes my magazine so special, in my opinion.
Something else, Kimberly, as you were talking and you had mentioned Disability Pride Month, I think me listening to you, not knowing before that you even said that there was a Disability Pride Month, I was curious, as someone who you said you studied marketing for a reason, because it's everywhere and you can use things to promote and what have you, how do you think that you create more awareness for the disability community with Disability Pride Month and things of that nature all throughout the year?
I think just me being present and showing up and asking the brands to be a part of my mission, let them know what I'm doing. Brands who have adaptive clothes, like, I've reached out to Anthropologie, like I said, and a few of the other brands, and they've given me permission to use their photos in my content, press permission. I reach out to other brands and let them, for the same reason, and I let them know, like, hey, I'm available to speak about adaptive fashion. I'm available to speak about my experiences as an entrepreneur. And just sharing my story continuously on platforms like this, that is the awareness that brings people in who aren't aware, and then just makes things better for our community. I did another YouTube show last week, and we were able to sit down and just talk about disability and my experiences with it. And the host was enlightened by things that I was saying, because not having experience with that, that was his moment of, oh, I see where you're coming from. I see the bridges that we can make between people who are disabled and, you know, people who want to learn. And that's all that I really want to do. Have something that empowers the disability community, but it's also teaching people who want to be allies to our community to learn and help and make awareness something that's not so hard fought anymore. So that maybe one day Disability Pride Month won't be something that someone asks me about. They will just know.
Again, if you have just tuned in now, you're tuning in to the One World Community Radio. Obviously, I'm in South Africa, and my co-hosts are in the U.S. at the state. And we are honored today to be joined by Ms. Mentor. So now I want to know, you know, we live in a time of social media, you know, accessibility when it comes to texting, phoning. It's easier for people to communicate all over the world. For example, what we're doing now, you know, communicating via Zoom. So I want to know with you, though, what have you taken advantage of all these resources, social media, to promote your content, to promote your business? And also, as you said earlier on, you want to also jump into different ventures.
Yes, social media is a big part of promoting my business. As we earlier discussed, I'm a solopreneur with a limited budget. Yes, I have companies and things helping me in terms of advice and different ways that I could possibly get my business's name out there. But at the end of the day, social media is free for the most part, and it's the best option to reach my community, to engage with my community. I started on social media a few years before I started with my business, just because I realized it was a way to connect with other people with disabilities who were at different points in their mindset when it comes to living with disability, or they went through something that I was now going through, and I wanted to see what their perspective was and how they handled it. So that is a very big part of social media and disability for me. So of course I wanted to tap into that for, you know, for any business reason, but also to make sure that I was doing what I could to make sure that people within the disability community knew I was creating this resource, and hoping to just share again my love of fashion and the fact that it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. Like, you can be stylish and someone with a disability.
Among your readership and contributors, what feedback or stories have most surprised you or shaped the direction of the magazine?
That's such a funny thing for you to ask, because I am writing from my experiences as a wheelchair user, but then I'll get like, oh, that's so cool. And when I post about it on social media, if I'm interacting with someone new, and they're like, oh, do you cover this, or are you touching upon that, or will you eventually like do parenting and something like that. I'm not a parent, so it was like, if that does come into play later on, that will be because I have contributor writers who have that experience to bring that to my audience. But I've been asked about a whole host of industries, which has surprised me in the best of ways, because it tells me that people are excited about the concept of having something that is for the community. And not to say that there aren't other magazines there, I just think for me, the way that I bring about my content and that I want to keep addressing fashion and beauty is what makes Sitting Beauty magazine unique.
Could you walk us through, you know, one of your favorite or standout photo shoots for the magazine?
I haven't had a photo shoot for the magazine yet. I do have one upcoming, where I will say that Anthropology has been a key supporter in helping me with that. And I don't want to share too much about it yet, but what I normally do for my photos and that for articles is I will request photos from my interviewees, or I will reach out to the brands whose photos and content I want to feature, let them know what I'm doing, and use their photos in the content. And that list of brands that have given me that permission is growing by the month, and I couldn't be more excited for that.
And Kimberly, when I was reading about your story initially, what I said, and even I said to Kusi before we came on the air here, I said your whole story is like a movie with how this started on social media. I know we were touching on the support of the community and listen and readers and whatever else have you, but what I really like is that this whole start is like a social media thing, like a Facebook group chat, and that's what really got the ball rolling on this and hearing from other stories. How did that kind of, I know you had the contest where you could talk more about, but how did that kind of get the ball rolling and seeing different perspectives from people in your community that you never had thought of, if that makes any sense?
It really did, because I was just thinking that I'm going to answer these questions and this kind of common idea for my articles. But the more I looked into the group, once I was trying to look to see if it was a reasonable idea, I went back to the group and I was like, hey, what do you think? If like there was a magazine for our group of people, would you read it? Some people said yes. It was like, oh my gosh, that would be such a great idea. Like, oh my gosh, you need to cover makeup. You need to cover this. And so they had so many different ideas for me. And it was just like, all right, I'm glad this is on the internet so I don't have to write this all down and I can come back and find it later. But it was such a fun experience and such an enlightening one to just hear some excitement about the possibility of creating this. Now, some people in the group weren't sure where my idea was coming from. They're like, I'll support you, but I'm not really sure how this is going to work. And I've been able to go back to those people, and they're like, some of those people are like, okay, fashion and beauty is not my thing, but I love the idea of your concept. So that support has also been great, because it also teaches me what I would need to create to reach that group. But again, I don't want to go too far yet, because I'm only just one person and I don't want to confuse my audience. But it's been interesting hearing all those different perspectives and being able to put some of it in the magazine.
Now, you did this originally as a contest, right? There was the Idea Spark program. So yeah. How is it kind of, because I'm just speaking for myself personally, if friends had sent that to me as a contest, like, oh, you should enter this, my mentality would be, I'll never win, I should never enter. How did you kind of get the confidence to enter and really believe in yourself that this could work, even when you were hearing from people in your own community, I don't know about this? What's that mentality like?
Well, I will say I started as a blog and I decided to turn it into a magazine. And I told my friend, and then she found the contest idea. And I said the same exact thing that you just said. And she's like, you know, just try it and see. But then once I started the application process, I must have drove my mom crazy with like, I'm not going to get my hopes up because I'm not going to get in. And I like went back and forth with this for like 2 days. And I filled out the application, and then I realized I got interviewed, like moving on to the next step. And then the interview went well, in my opinion, but I wasn't sure. And I was like, oh, I didn't say this. I didn't say I wanted to do this. And again, I'm pretty sure I drove my mom crazy, but she's been one of my biggest supporters. And she's like, you know what? You know what your idea is. Whether or not you get the money, you're going to keep pushing forward. It just wouldn't have happened as quickly for me to be able to put the magazine together and do what I've done. I'm just glad that I was able to have the support system of that friend who pushed me, my family, and the mentors of the program that I was working with, who were able to help me put together my vision into a pitch that impressed the judges enough to award me money to get started.
Again, you're still tuning in to One World Community Radio. They live all the way from US, and we're speaking to amazing Kimberly Mento, who is the founder of The Sitting Beauty, and she's sharing her story and her insight and passion for fashion and disability advocacy. So now, I want to know, Ms. Mento, you've said that a fashion allows people to connect with you beyond your disability. So why do you think fashion is such a powerful tool for inclusion and self-expression?
Because there's a quote, and I can't remember it, so I won't say that one. But fashion, like, you don't need to be speaking the same language to see someone's outfit and say, oh, I like what they're wearing. Where did they get it? Or to appreciate how they choose to put something together, whether it's one piece of their outfit or the entire thing. It's its own piece of universal language, in my opinion, that everyone should be able to utilize in whatever way that works for them and however way they want to express themselves. And that's not always possible without adaptive fashion, depending on how your disability affects you. So having adaptive fashion be a part of that so that everybody can take part and build those connections with people is so important. I think that, I don't know what more I could say other than it's just like this instant thing that can bring someone from like someone you're walking by just saying like, oh, I like how they styled their hair. I will say the funny thing, and this brings back social media, one of my good friends now, I was just drumming up awareness for the magazine in one of the social media groups that I'm in, and I put the promo of my latest issue at the time and a little bit about myself and a little bit about the magazine as a post. And another member commented on it. He was like, oh, you love fashion too. Like, I'm someone with a disability who's also an entrepreneur who loves fashion. And we connected soon after that on Zoom. And now we talk weekly. I think fashion and even the love of whatever you can find in common with someone else, fashion or not, it just has the power to bring people together in a way that not a lot of other things can.
And how do you bring an audience into Sitting Beauty that is not part of the disabled community? I know you mentioned in the beginning that this was kind of for your community, but how do you bring people outside the community and educate them as well?
Well, like I said, I've done a number of speeches for organizations that help the disability community, who's not every person on attending one of those speeches is going to have a disability or be connected to it. So I think speaking about my experiences and the few topics that I am focused on right now is a way to bring awareness and bridge the gap between people with disabilities being so different from those without. And there's also the fact that I know that Sitting Beauty, while it is for my community, I'm fully aware that someone who's an ally could be buying it for someone in their life. And, you know, they may learn something or reading an article or be able to approach a conversation a different way. And that in itself is its own powerful tool to then bridge the gap of thinking that disability is this separate thing when it's really not. Yes, I approach life differently because I'm sitting down in my wheelchair, but I'm not really different from anybody else. And that's the whole point. Well, that's one of the points of Sitting Beauty.
So, Kimberly, so what's next for the magazine?
Actually, I hit 1 year in March. So I'm about 1 year and a half now, which is still crazy to me. Now I am just focused on continuing to create great content for my readers, building that list of brands who know about my magazine and want to work with me. Soon I hope to start hiring contributors, because I would like to not only not be doing everything myself, I'd like to be able to tell other stories of people with disabilities that and the only way to do that is to bring in other people with fresh ideas, new content, and new perspectives. So I'm hoping to do that within the next few months. I'm also hoping to just see where the brand and where the community in itself and telling me what they would like to see, or what, you know, what is happening in the community that's going to inform my decisions. I know that I will be continuing to create content in that sense, and I also know that there are things that I want to do, but I also want to be sure that I leave space for society and our community to tell me what they would like to see, or society, what they would like to learn, or my experiences to inform that kind of content.
In the last year, what's something that you've learned about the business that made you see, okay, I can make an impact here, I could change this, I don't like how this is, I like this? What have you learned, and how do you see how you can advance the business and how people talk about it, as we've discussed this whole time?
I honestly did not, when I first started the magazine and I was doing the pitching competition, I don't remember at this moment, but I didn't think speaking was going to be such a big part of my role as an entrepreneur. I didn't realize that my story would be impactful to people. I don't know why, but I just didn't think, I just, you know, was going at this from a business perspective, and I didn't think about like how sharing the story of like why I wanted to start this business and, you know, things I'm learning month in, month out would be something that people would be motivated by, to just say like, oh, I want to be a part of what she's doing, because She's right. Awareness needs to happen. There's also been like minute things I've learned as an entrepreneur, as we have talked about the distance of being able to do everything from where we all are while we're recording this. And there are certain aspects of my business tools that I'm using that are located in other countries. So if there's tech support that I need, I will be getting up at 3 in the morning to go handle that tech support while all my friends are sleeping. So there's that funny aspect of it, but I'm enjoying the journey and I'm learning as much about myself and the business world as I feel people are learning from my magazine or maybe even more so.
I think people are resonating to your story, and this is just me as an outside perspective, because I think you graduated from school 10 years ago, and now you just passed your 1 year 10 years after that. But in between that, you had all the hurdles and people saying no and the rejection, then you entered the contest because everyone's been told no, and everybody has a dream and everybody has a goal, and you kept going. You wanted to work in fashion. And you kept going for it, even when it seemed like all the odds were stacked against you, which I think everyone feels like at some point in their life, the odds are stacked against them. So, how did you keep going? And do you feel that was true in your case?
Yeah, honestly, like I said, when I first started, I just needed something that I enjoyed doing away from the merry-go-round of, oh, we're, job hunting and, it's not working out. I got mentally tired of that. And I was like, I'm not putting myself in this hole. Living with a disability is doable, but there are certain times that it's a lot, and I'm not going to take on something else that I can avoid and do something that fits me better and actually makes me happy to do. Not to say that every moment of my entrepreneurial journey has been, sunshine and roses, but it keeps me going because I know ultimately that I'm creating something that I wish I had when I was younger. And I feel like that's true with a lot of entrepreneurial stories. So there's that. There's also the fact that I can see it in my head. Like I'm just getting started. I'm at year one, but I see year 15 in my head, and I'm like, all right, I will get there if I do one more step, one more. And I keep going just happily, too much to sometimes with my family saying it's time to take a break from your computer, but. And I just love what I do and love being able to share these stories and especially the fashion aspect of it. Like I said, I'm a fashion girl at heart. I get inspiration from art for articles by walking around the mall. Who doesn't want to do that? So I like I just find ways to enjoy different pieces of it, and that keeps me going when people are telling me no, not yet, or they don't necessarily see the vision. I can say that's okay. I can see it in my head. If I get to a point where they then want to work with me, I will be able to say, okay, you see my vision now. I'm glad and I'm happy to work with you. If not, I know that there will be companies and people who are supporting my vision who will help me stay motivated if I ever lose that drive that I seem to have endless optimism for.
So, Kimberly, now if you had to describe your fashion style in 3 words, what would it be?
I think it's a little bit of two things, and my new fashion friend said this first one to me. She said it's a little bit of like festive fun because I'm the person that will wear like spider or pumpkin earrings for Halloween. I'll wear hearts for Valentine's Day, like shamrocks for St. Patty's Day, just because like I love all these different things and I love playing around with the colors, and I think that's like the best time to do all of that. Otherwise, when I'm doing casual aspects or like business events, I like just neutral colors with neutral with like pops of colors with like a little bit of fun thrown in. And I'll have like dangly earrings because they're fun and different things. I like to just throw in a little bit of fun into my outfits with still being on point with what the occasion is.
Kimberly, you had mentioned that Sitting Beauty was something that you wish you had had when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
What would your message be to people in college, in high school, who went through the same things that you went through, trials and tribulations, and are looking at you right now and saying, wow, that's an example? What would you say to all those people?
Well, I would firstly be glad that they see me as an example. It's not something that I set out to do, but I would be glad to take up that mantle if it meant motivating others within my community, especially young girls. I would definitely say, and this is, I didn't set out to be an entrepreneur. I would have been perfectly fine working for someone else, but that didn't work out for me, maybe because I was supposed to do this. So the first pieces of my advice come from that mindset, where my first thing I would say is learn a second language. It will give you an advantage. Start networking as soon as you can, because unfortunately, as a person with a disability, you're going to have to kind of work harder to be seen, unfortunately, but that's just the way disability is seen right now. So you're going to need as many people in your corner as possible to prove that you know what you're talking about, that you deserve to be in that room, and you can do the job that they're asking you to do. If they choose to do entrepreneurship, my advice would be start with what you love, and you can continuously read about for hours and hours on end and get lost in writing about, like, you're just sitting there and hours are passing by and you don't even notice. That's the kind of, not, I won't say obsession, because I don't like that word when it comes to focusing on your goals, but I guess love and drive for it. Like, it doesn't feel like work to you. I would also say talk to people who know you best to see if you want to start a business but you're not sure what it should be, to see what you're good at, because it's going to have to be something, like I said, that you're passionate about, that you can easily do, that doesn't take away too much energy from you on those days where your disabled body may not be giving you a lot of energy. There are a lot of times that I'm glad that my business is virtual, because there are some days I can sit in front of my computer and type for 6 hours. There are certain days that I wake up and my disabled body is like, we're not doing that today. And I will just be, I'm like, okay, my plan is a switch, and I'm doing social media engagement from my couch. And also have fun with it. You have to have fun with any aspect of whatever you do.
You're still tuning in on One World Radio. I know that Cody has been, you know, a little bit there on the side. Cody, are you still there?
Yes, I am. It's been so great to hear everything you're talking about, Kimberly. And I'm curious, where do you see the industry making genuine progress, and where is it still falling short? You've mentioned Anthropology, other people increasing their accessible lines, and yet this is still a rapidly growing market that I feel like so many brands should be tapping into.
Yes, you're definitely not wrong about that. A lot of brands are making stylish, adaptive clothes, but that's just a recent thing, even though and the adaptive fashion market has been growing for well over a decade. Previously, the adaptive clothes focused more on function in terms of, like, being able to include the magnetic pieces or the buttons or Velcro, so you could get dressed easier, someone could help you get dressed, whatever you needed, over style. And that's personally why I would have rather struggle with the regular clothes than wear the adaptive ones, because I was like, this does not fit my style. I do not care that it's easier to put on. I really did not care. Now, thanks to other brands like Anthropology, Primark, they're slowly getting better at including function and style. So that is one thing that I would tell every brand. I'm like, yes, we need the function, because if we can't get it on, then there's no point. But that also doesn't mean, I'm like, I graduated college a decade ago, like we've discussed. I don't want to wear something that would not, you know, reflect that in my clothing. It just, it would not feel like me. And that's the whole point of doing style, to feel like yourself, to feel more empowered and all the things. You don't want something that doesn't. I would definitely tell brands as well that make the adaptive clothes available in the store, please, and make the store accessible. There are so many places that I go where I either can't get the adaptive pieces, I'd have to try them on, buy them online, try them on, then send them back if, you know, I get the wrong size. And that's not the easiest thing to do, considering that I don't drive. I'd have to get someone to do it for me. And the whole point of adaptive fashion and a lot of things is so that I can have as much independence as possible. And I hope that I'm not alone in saying that. But so in order to do these things and to want me, and I hope I'm correct in saying this, other members of the community to come into the stores, we need to have access to not only the store and comfortably move around, but to be able to see the clothes in the store and pick it up and feel the fabric and do all the other things that someone else can do without thinking. These are all concepts that you think of when you're shopping and moving around, as these are things that I've thought of. And if I can't maneuver a store, instead of risking knocking over a mannequin and causing a big mess because I can't pick it up, I'm not going in the store.
So, Kimberly, lastly, on my side, I know that we don't have time. I know that people with disability all over the world in some places face abuse and all these things. Sometimes they don't even have opportunities like you have. I know that you also didn't just start all of a sudden, all these things are happening to you. You also had to go through some difficulties. What words of motivation for anyone with disability who's tuning in now, listening to you, to your story, amazing, beautiful story. What words of motivation, in short?
I just, my motivation is what we've already talked about. I truly just wanted to create something that I wish I had. And that's what it really just comes down to. And that can feel a lot for a lot of people. If that's where you're starting with your idea, that's fine. You have a goal, and a lot of people will tell you, because you're disabled, no, you can't do this. My answer to that is, I may not be able to do it the way you think it can be done, but I will be able to do it, and I will be able to accomplish this goal. And if it's not that, it's not working out the way that I thought it would, because, you know, there was something unforeseen for me, then I can pivot and get to something else. But always have a goal regardless of what you want to do, regardless of what someone tells you.
And Kimberly, there's a quote on the Sitting Beauty website that I just love, and I just think encapsulates your whole journey from starting that day at the university when the girl walked up to you and complimented your outfit. It says, "People will stare, make it worth their while." And I just think that sums up your whole story so well.
Yes, thank you. Say, I would just like to say that if people want to subscribe to Sitting Beauty magazine, they can go to sittingbeauty.com and they will be able to scroll to the bottom where it says become a subscriber. And I would love to welcome you to the Sitting Beauty community.
And on that note, Kimberly, we thank you very much for coming on our show today.
Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to the One World Community Radio Show on 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University, 88.3 WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio Hofstra University. 88.1 FM WCWP Brookville LIU Post. 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University. 88.3 FM WVCR Loudonville, Siena College. 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana, broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.